Welcome to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
We think so, too.
Yes, indeed.
That's why we talk about that stuff. Welcome to another edition of Emil Franzink's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander here, Bunker de France across the way.
Yep.
And way out on the left coast, it's our good friend Todd Roberts. Howdy.
Mighty, mighty, mighty patiti.
We got us a good one today. We're going to talk about adventure writing. Our guest is Western author Scott McCrae. He's written bunches of other stuff, and we'll get to all that stuff. But first, I guess we have to do the Bunker's Bunkhouse stuff.
You bet your booty.
Oh. See, you got your own theme going.
Oh, my God.
I know.
You have sunk to the lowest depths.
No. This was your approved theme.
Okay.
All right, I'll find another one.
I'm going to grumble.
I'm going to find another one then.
Okay, I want some. How about Teddy Bears on Parade? I like that one.
Okay.
We're not at the Main Street Light Parade at Disneyland.
Okay. Yeah, I love Teddy Bears on Parade. Anyhow, what I'm going to do, and I'll explain this for our guest, Scott, is I take... This is the good, bad, and the bovine coming to you from Bunker's Bunkhouse. But what I do is I start with today, which happens to be the 6th of June, and I travel 3 days back in time and 3 days forward in time. But those 3 days forward in time are still in the past, and I know that makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Now, starting with June 3rd, 1539, Hernando de Soto, Spanish explorer and conquistador, who was involved in expeditions in Nicaragua and the Yucatan Peninsula, but is best known for leading the first European expedition deep into the territory of the modern-day U.S., but it wasn't modern back then. Anyhow, he claimed Florida for Spain. He traveled through Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, and most likely Arkansas. The guy couldn't settle down. He's the first European to cross the Mississippi River. Now, with all that traveling, you'd think he wouldn't settle down, but he did, because he's buried there alongside the Mississippi. Now,
he also made a great car.
Yeah.
I don't care what they say.
I like the Sotos. I like the front end. They were
really cool. Hey, man, the Fire Dome.
But now we're going to move up a little bit in time to the 4th of June, 1792. Captain George Vancouver, Royal Navy officer and explorer, claims Puget Sound for Great Britain. He explored and... charted northwestern Pacific region all the way from Alaska down to California.
Wow.
That's a lot of traveling. I seem to get a lot of cartographers on this.
Yeah. I wonder why that is.
I think I like maps.
Yeah, apparently so.
Yeah, I never know where I'm going. So
well.
I never know where I've been. I don't even know where I am. Now, on the 5th of June, 1895, William Lawrence Boyd. You know who that is?
It is not. It is Bill Boyd.
That is Hoppy.
Oh, okay. I thought we were talking about Bill Boyd. There's a number of Boyds.
There's three Boyds.
Yeah, Bill Boyd, the musician.
The
Bill Boyd, the cowboy. Bill Boyd, they called him.
He was the one that got busted. But Hoppy got the blame.
Yeah.
Anyhow, Mr. Boyd. He's an actor, a film producer, known for for portraying the cowboy hero Hopalong Cassidy, which
in
is
66 films.
Yeah, and you know, and actually Hoppy's right up Scott Bob's alley, because Scott Bob is, I think, maybe a master of pulp westerns.
All right, we'll get
to
that.
We'll get to that later. He was a silent era matinee idol. I mean, he was big. And this is a side story, personal. My dad, back in the silent days, actually stood in for him on a couple of pictures.
No kidding.
Because my aunt was a executive secretary and department head at Universal back then. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, he also did a half-hour Hopalong Cassidy radio series, and he did 104 episodes.
Yep.
A lot of people don't know he did radio.
Yep.
Yep. And now, today, June 6th, but in 1813, during the War of 1812, this is a year after the war started in 1813, the Battle of Stony Creek was fought, considered a critical turning point in the war. A British force of 700 under John Vincent defeats American forces twice their size under William Winder and John Chandler. See, so we didn't win everything in the American Revolution. Well, this was afterwards. Anyhow, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay,
June 7, 1776. That's a date that is kind of resonates.
Hmm.
Richard Henry Lee presented the Lee Resolution to the Continental Congress, which led to the declarations of the independent. The resolution formally declared the 13 colonies independent from Britain and laid the groundwork for the United States. And he was also a, I think, the grandfather of Robert E. Lee.
He was a father.
Father, okay. I know he was important. And I know he had kids.
Yep.
But that's all I knew.
Okay,
June 8, 1906. Now we're getting to one of my favorite presidents, Mr. Theodore Roosevelt. He signed the Act of, he signed the Antiquities Act, the first U.S. law to provide general legal protection and for cultural and natural resources of history or scientific interest on federal lands. And we need to get back to the principles that he set up and get away from the conservation BS.
That's like the what you're talking about there is the establishment of the U.S. Park Service.
Yeah, well, that's came from that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, the funny thing, this is off the record, but the funny thing is that it was set up so that guys that like to hunt could hunt, and it wasn't for slaughter. It was for preservation of game.
Yeah.
And that's very important.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you can't even hunt butterflies with a net. Okay, June 9, 1534.
I'll tell my wife not to use the 357 on the butterfly next time.
Oh, hey, the scatter gun's better. Anyhow, we're going to finish up with June 9, 1534. Jacques Cartier, a French maritime explorer, another cartographer, and first European to describe and map the Gulf of St. Lawrence and the shores of the St. Lawrence River, which he named Canada after the Iroquois name for two big settlements he saw. How about that? That was the week that wasn't.
You forgot a very important item that happened on this date.
On today's date?
On today's date.
Oh, I didn't forget it. I just skipped it.
Why?
Why? Because we've done it before, and I know you were going to bring it up, so I thought I'd let you do it.
Today is the anniversary of D-Day. And
that was D-Day.
Hey, hey.
Oh, there's a new movie out that's supposed to be awesome about D-Day. I can't think of the title of it. I saw some previews.
Brendan Fraser.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Playing Eisenhower.
Okay.
It's called Judgment Day.
All right, well, anyway, this is a very important day because this is the day that the liberation of Europe started in World War II. And
I thought it started in Africa.
No. And the Europeans have pissed all over the place on it, so, you know. I think it's important that we remember the veterans.
Lest we forget.
That's correct.
The great Shelley Volk said so many times,
yep,
without war, this country would be a German-speaking, sushi-eating slave colony.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Like the man in the high castle.
Well, the French do a better job of honoring it than we do, I think.
Well, okay, whatever. All right, let's get our guest on here. Scott McRae, Western author. Howdy, sir. How you doing?
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Oh, you made it through all that BS, huh?
Yes, he did, as a matter of fact.
He's got
three. You got three hellos.
Yeah, well, we can do it Three Stooges style if you want. I mean,
I'm a victim of circumstances. Yeah.
Anyway, welcome to the program. Happy to have you on here, sir.
And
you know, you got you have a buttload of books out, and my God, I don't even know where to start with the buttload of books, except to find out you started writing when you were in first grade, and I think that's great. I think that's great.
And it got it published.
No,
he didn't get it published.
Joke, I'm an overnight success because I wanted to be a writer ever since I was in second grade, and now that I'm 60, I'm an author. So I'm just overnight.
Yeah, you're a late bloomer.
Late bloomer, yes.
Which is better than being caught in your bloomers.
I've never quite got buttload of books, but I think I'll be calling them my buttload of books from now on.
I'm curious. What goes on in that mind of yours that you're able to whip out all of these books on mostly Westerns, but, I mean, you've done some other stuff. What revolves in your mind?
So, my better half, when we were dating 36 years ago, said that my imagination was fetid and overripe. and that's kind of what it is. I'm one of those guys who in the shower is thinking of, you know, it'd be really great if there was a Martian here. So
in the shower?
In the book.
You know, in the book. Oh.
So I just live in a very hyper imaginative place.
You know, going through your...
They do have medications for that now.
You know, going through your background there, I was scared because I kept seeing an awful lot of me there.
Yeah,
you know,
that's scary.
The pulps and the same things I liked and devoured, and I'm going, oh my God, this is a later version of me.
Well, the promo...
Except you could write.
Yeah, right. Well, the promo picture that I used... to advertise your appearance here is the Tom Mix and the Christmas Party. I think that's great that you took Tom Mix, made a series of books with him or about him. And, I mean, you know, hey, it can be, it's believable, I think.
It's about time is what it is.
Well,
yeah. I'll tell you a dirty little secret about that. So when I was a kid, back when dinosaurs ruled the Earth, I hated Westerns. Like, I'm sorry, when I was a little kid.
Okay, just, show's over.
Kid, I hated Westerns. And I think part of that is when I was a little kid, they would take me to drive-ins, and this was the height of the spaghetti Western.
Oh, yeah.
And I probably seen spaghetti Westerns when I was 5, you know? But, you know, it's a drive-in. Your parents put you in the car, and you're supposed to fall asleep. But,
sure.
You know? Little Scott was in the back seat looking like, wow, his head got shot off. for a long, long time, you know, Westerns were like garlic to a vampire. Mm-hmm. And then when I was a little older, that was the height of the nostalgia craze, you know, in the early 70s when, you know, everybody started looking at old movies again and listening to old-time radio and things like that. And the local PBS station was playing the Tom Mix serial, The Miracle Rider.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like the heavens parted, golden trumpets came out, and it said, you will love this for the rest of your life. And I was just obsessed with Tom Mix ever since I was about 11.
Oh, yeah.
And I just... And that was my gateway drug to the Western. So
that's
as soon
how
as you
I learned how to read.
Oh, through Westerns?
Yes. Oh, comic books.
Yeah. Comic books, yeah. Hey, so I was just...
You remember the Dell comic books and the Fawcett?
Oh, sure.
Oh,
yeah.
The best cowboy comic books.
So, I didn't think of writing Westerns at all until many years later. I was going to write a book about the 1939 World's Fair. Mm-hmm. And I wanted there to be two heroes in it, and I wanted them to represent, you know, sort of the future of America and America's past. And so I had it as the two heroes, Buster Crabbe, who was actually at the 1939 World's Fair at the Aquitaine, and Tom Mix, who also appeared at the New York World's Fair. And, you know, they stop a plot from anarchists who are trying to blow up the World's Fair. And I said to myself, because I know me very well, you know, I should probably do a real straight Western. And I sent a proposal to this publisher in the UK, DSP. And I said, you know, I'd love to do a series of Tom Mix Westerns. And he said yes. And the next thing you knew, I did 9 of them.
God, yeah, I love, you remember the old Tom Mix radio show? It wasn't Tom. I was devastated when I found out it wasn't really Tom Mix doing it.
Yeah, actually, Sir Tom was dead by the time that was on.
Yeah.
So, you know, the really fascinating thing about Tom Mix is that people hear the name today, and they, if they think about him, they sort of think about him in the same way they think about, say, Wyatt Earp. Mm. Or Doc Holliday, they think he was there then. Mm-hmm. And I think the name itself is sort of, you know, passed on into myth. And, you know, I think people know the name Tom Mix, and they know that he's a Western hero without necessarily knowing that he was in the movies.
Some will say that he was the first Western star. We disagree on that.
He was the first in the same category as a Buffalo Bill.
Bronco Super. Billy was the very first Western star, or Justin T. Barnes. Justin T. Barnes,
But Bronco Billy, he's the proto.
Right.
I kind of lean towards the Bronco Billy myself.
Yeah, so, all right.
Well, William S. Hart was the first superstar Western star.
Yes, yes.
But not as big as Mix.
But he was predecessor to him.
He paved
the way. Remember, they both were pallbearers at Wyatt Earp's funeral.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Buffalo Bill. So Tom Mix, as you guys know, was born in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And he was just a normal Pennsylvania turn-of-the-century kid. And Buffalo Bill's Wild West went through town. And he saw the show multiple times. And he went to his mother and he said, Mom, make me a cowboy outfit. And she made it. So no, this is true. So Heaven does not, I mean, we do not know what his cowboy outfit looked like, but she makes him a cowboy outfit. And kind of like me, and kind of like you guys, I'm sure, you know, there was this pivotal moment where this Western hero came out and touched him in some profound way and said, oh, so this is what I want to do. And so Tom Mix is there because of Buffalo Bill. So Buffalo Bill is really the founder of the feast in every way.
Right.
There you go. All right. We got to do our first commercial break here. Pardon me. Here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander losing the voice. And what a voice it was. Bunker to France, Todd Roberts, our guest Scott McRae. He writes Westerns. We'll talk more about that right after these important announcements. Stay tuned.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
Yes, sir, Mr. Walsh. Matter of fact, I've heard a lot about you. Not all of it bad, either. How would you like to be Texas Jack Butler, star cowboy, bronco buster, and all-around wild man of the West?
Monty Walsh will do.
This is the Voices of the West.
Take a look at the sky where the whippoorwill trills, and the mountain so high where the cataract spills.
Take a look at the falls and the rippling rills. Hear the wondrous calls of the whispering hills.
We're back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Gentlemen,
great,
tell me who the singer is. Who?
Great song.
I know. Who's the singer?
I play it again. I wasn't being
Oh, come on. Todd?
Roy Rogers?
No.
No. I know enough to know that. I wasn't paying attention.
Let the silver sand change.
It's John Ford's son-in-law, Ken Curtis.
Oh, jeez.
I know, good stuff, eh? You know,
where do you find these?
I find these things all over the damn place, you know?
A bottomless pit.
You know, no, it's not a bottomless pit, but it is kind of a pit. No, I haven't. We're back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker DeFrance, Todd Roberts. Our guest is Scott McCray. He writes westerns. And bunches of them.
Tons of them.
Before we get, we want to talk about the covers to your Marshall books there. But before that, I want Todd to get in there and ask whatever he wants.
Speak up.
So, Scott, so often we hear from writers that they, you know, they find their inspiration in so many different corners that none of them are the same. You know, Louis L'Amour used to push his kids in the car and make his wife drive, and he would sit in the passenger seat in the front and they drive throughout the West and he'd jot down notes. My girlfriend's grandparents would shove the boys in the car years and years ago, 75 years ago, and they'd drive around the Southwest and get out wherever they thought it looked pleasant and collect rocks and arrowheads and and take photographs, and then they'd come home and her grandmother would paint paintings from the photographs they took. Where do you find your inspiration? Where does that come from? Where do you find it?
Heavy drinking.
Yes. Okay, see, so obviously you were not telling the truth there prior to our conversations, Scott, because often when you and I were talking, I kept saying, listen to the shows, listen to the shows. And when you listen to our shows, you hear about Harry and I traveling on a train, drunk. So obviously, you did listen to the show, Scott. You did do your homework.
Todd, he is one of us.
Okay.
So the honest answer to your question is I walk a lot. And when I'm plotting or figuring out next steps in a book, you know, I usually take a walk, and that sort of opens everything up, and I lose track of, you know, time and place, and, you know, you're standing there rather walking, trying to figure out what to do next. And, you know, last time I did that, by the way, I'm here in Southern California, and I found myself in Arizona, so I just walk around. I walk around repetitively. So if I'm not outside walking around, which I do a lot, I will actually, I know this sounds ridiculous, I will go into the kitchen and walk around the kitchen island, you know, four or five times, like I'm circumnavigating the globe. And,
okay.
And fix the sandwich.
I can't, you know, some people seriously, they sit and they smoke a cigar, or they sit and they have a drink or something, and I really need to move to think well, so I just get up and walk around.
Hmm.
I I think what happens, because, you know, again, delving into you, I think you have brain farts of all the stuff you've read, and it just bubbles up, just like the three witches' cauldron. It just bubbles up and pops.
And comes together.
So, you know, aside from having a really grotesque imagination, I have a curiously retentive memory. So I'm the kind of guy who actually, you know, so just this afternoon, for example, we're having lunch, and I started reciting an old Trident commercial that I used to hear when I was... So everything is in there.
Can you do it again?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Look, Holmes, you've discovered the body. Robot says something truly amazing. Trident here, sugarless here. Both cost the same, yet Carefree actually gives you 32% more gum by weight than Trident. And the taste
is on the back today.
Wait, so, yeah. I want a piece of gum now.
Wait till you get to be our age.
What makes you think I'm not?
Well, you already told us how old you are.
I'm worried about when I'm in the home. I'm worried about when I'm in the home, because right now people would already think I'm senile. So.
Yeah.
That's always a good one.
I've got a copy of Ezra Parent, U.S. Marshal Flint's Honor. It's the one you gave me at the book fair.
We want to talk about that cover, too.
Oh, yeah, it's great cover. But going back to the back end of the book, you've got the author's second note. And I want to read the first line. The author's great dilemma is always, do I want a happy ending?
Hmm. Yeah. I am not a literary artist. I see myself as an entertainer. And I don't think anybody is entertained by an unhappy ending. Mm-hmm. And I always shoot for a happy ending if it makes sense in the story, because I think people read Westerns, or many people read Westerns, because they want a release from the very real contemporary cares. I mean, mm-hmm. who wants a downer ending? Mm-hmm. I mean, you need to have a downer ending sometimes, but I'm not a great believer in unhappy endings, because I want people to be happy.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's like with us. I think that's why we're stuck in the Westerns of the silence in the 30s and 40s, is because all those old B cowboys and silent cowboys, they always had a happy ending. They rode away into the sunset contented.
And kissed a horse.
Oh.
Yeah.
And the horse kicked back. No tongues.
Yeah, I know. I always thought that The Shootist would have been better if Jimmy Stewart ran in and said, I have a cure.
Hey, I was wrong in my diagnosis.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Oh, my God. That's really great. We got to have him on for alternate endings of movies.
Oh, yeah. That's another show. We want to do a show on alternate endings.
Oh, my God.
And we also want to do a show with what if so-and-so had done it instead of somebody
else.
Yeah,
right.
Wanted to see Tim Burton's The Searchers.
Uh-huh. With Johnny Depp as...
Yes, with Johnny Depp and the Natalie Wood part.
Oh, my God.
Hey, you know, speaking of Johnny Depp...
You have a sick mind, sir.
I think I think you and me are the only two people in the world that appreciate The Lone Ranger, because that wasn't a movie about The Lone Ranger. It was a movie about Tonto.
Mm. So we're in the absolute minority. I think The Lone Ranger was a fabulous movie. And aside from it being about Tonto, what it really, really is about is that we are not worthy of The Lone Ranger. Mm-hmm. We contemporary people, I think he's too good for us, is kind of what the subtext is.
Okay.
And I think it's fascinating that somebody would make a movie and say, look, here's a hero, and you people don't deserve him. I thought it was, you know, overstuffed and ornate, and I just loved it to pieces. I especially loved the opening bits, you know, the frame with the little kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in some weird way, that really gets to some core part of the Western myth that I've always really responded to. I always like the cowboy hero and a kid's sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
Because I often think of the cowboy hero as, you know, a guide and a leader and a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And they're important in kids' moral education. I know this sounds highfalutin
No, it does not.
But I mean, a lot of people hate kid sidekicks, for example, in movies. And I think movies are always infinitely better with a kid sidekick.
Hell yeah. Because they're innocent.
In the 30s, especially.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, the best Indiana Jones movie is Temple of Doom because of the sidekick.
Exactly.
I think one of the things that I found particularly moving about The Lone Ranger is that this is Tonto telling the story to a kid. And that's the other thing is that, the great tradition of Westerns is you're sitting around the campfire and you're telling a story. Mm-hmm. And you're keeping alive the myth of the West. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you tell the story and you're demythologizing the West. But, I mean, you're keeping the West alive. Mm-hmm. I was very moved by it.
I love that opening. He starts telling the story. Yes, me and the Lone Ranger, we were robbing banks. And the kid says, no, no, you guys were heroes. So Tonto just adapts.
Yeah. So let's talk about the artwork on your books here. And just about every one of them that I found online. And Bunker's holding one up. What is it?
For everybody to see.
Yeah, right. Well, I can't see it because you keep moving it around. Ezra Flint, U.S. Marshal. And that is, I can't see what the other one.
Oh, it's Flint's Honor. This is the one that you gave me at the book fair.
Okay, so the artwork on that, did you have any input on that, or was that your publisher who did that? Because if it was your publisher, well, even if you did it, it's really damn good. Like lobby cards from the 30s and 40s.
This is pretty much the standard of Western Saddles.
I'm the best publisher in the world. I publish mainly with Dusty Saddles, or DSP, which is based in the UK, believe it or not. And the publisher is a guy named Nick Whale, who's a funny and great guy. But the publisher, covers, by the way, are done here in California. Wow. By a great cover designer named Kevin Diamond. And every time he comes up with a cover, it just completely knocks my socks off. And I think he can never top himself, but they always get better. So, Kevin Diamond, you rock, Kevin, if you're listening.
Yeah. And he had to have done over 100 of these covers.
Oh, they're great. They're great. They just look like those. You want to cut the thing out and frame it.
Well, you know that's the thing too. Scott talked about I'm scattering my thoughts, but he talked about at one point in some of the other stuff his love for the old covers on the pulp westerns.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they're stories in themselves.
Westerns.
Yeah, good stuff, good stuff. All right, we need to take our next commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. Scott McRae, Western author, is our guest. He writes Westerns. We'll be back after this.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Ol Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, 200 full-service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
Put up your hand. It is Manuel Alonso Valdez who orders it. Comprende?
How is it?
You have meet with the greatest caballero in all the West.
Oh, well, that's different. Are you sure this is the West? Cracky, I thought I was lost.
This is the Voices of the West.
On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. And our guest, Scott McRae, he writes westerns. I don't know what else. Bunches of them, buttloads of them. Anyway.
Bunches of them, yes.
Anyway.
I'm going to change my name, by the way, to Bunker Disconnected.
Anyway, I play the High Chaparral theme. I hope you recognize that. Because Mr. De France was in like 52, 53 or so episodes of that great television program. And sometimes he chased himself, sometimes he wouldn't. Sometimes he was up on the roof saying, "Rider coming," and sometimes not.
And sometimes I'd come to my own rescue.
Yeah, right. Anywho, and we do have permission to play that song from the daughter of the composer. So
yes.
Pound sand copyright people. Yeah.
You know, I've got a quote for you. This is something that you said or wrote, I'm not sure which. Public relations and advertising are great fields for budding writers because they teach you how to lie for a living. And I thought that was so interesting that what you wrote about is as a public relations guy in the medical field. Could you enlighten us a little bit more about that?
No, I don't think he can.
I could. You know, you're young and you want to be a writer, and then you realize the first thing is that you don't make any money, so you have to do something to live. You know, they say, how do you make a small fortune as a writer? Well, first you start with a big one. But so I needed something to do, you know, so I could live, but I also wanted to write, so I ended up writing public relations materials, you know, for things like urge urinary incontinence.
Ooh.
And
hey, I just saw that commercial on TV.
and it was in some ways it was a great way to make a living. In other ways, it was an awful way to make a living because when you're in public relations, mostly you know for healthcare,
right,
you work very late,
yep,
on both Thanksgiving Eve,
yep,
and Christmas Eve,
yep,
and New Year's Eve, because that's when people put out bad news. So, medical trial that shows that this thing does not work and you've wasted $1 million, I have an idea. Let's put it on the newswire at 8:30 at night on Christmas Eve.
There you
because
go.
Because nobody ever see it. But that meant that poor Scott McRae had to be at his desk at Christmas Eve.
See, you understand the news cycle.
Oh yeah.
You know, you've just given me a great idea for a new series for you. The hero has a bedwetting problem.
Uh-oh.
Ah. Okay. Two sheets to the wind.
Like he goes out to face the bad guy for the big final gunfight and he wets his pants.
And his father works in the cheat factory.
Yeah. We also have an idea for another series, a Doc Brown frontier proctologist.
Fastest
finger in the West.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think I've told this story before, but back in the old days at cowboy shooting here in Southern California, there was a guy I used to shoot with who dressed in a suit, you know, with a vest and a chain and everything and a watch chain. He had a top hat on and he was pretty handy. So he took an egg beater and he put instead of the thing that beat the eggs, he put a long kind of phallic thing on the end of it, which was basically a juicer.
Okay.
It would, you know, and he would walk around and crank that handle, and the top, the part that would go into the fruit would spin around, and people would say, what are you doing? He said, duck feed buddy here, free proctologist on the prairie.
Yep.
And it would distract people from shooting.
Yeah, indeed. I should imagine.
Well, we have tons of ideas that probably will never go anywhere. Yes.
You know, we probably just ruined his career.
Yeah, right. But you know, hey, we'll produce the ideas, and where it goes, who knows?
I'll wait for the TV series to come out.
TV series. Hi, Doc Brown, frontier proctologist. All right, where are we going to go next here? Let's see. We got Tom X series. We got the Marshall series. There's another one. The Mountain Man.
Oh, he's got Brannigan.
Brannigan, yeah.
So, you know, when you write what are essentially pulp westerns, sometimes you have wonderful moments of revelation. You're like, oh, I'm going to write about this. And sometimes your publisher calls you up and says, you know, Scotty, I think you should do this. I'm like, all right, sure. So he calls me up one day from the UK and says, you know, Mountain Men books are really selling well. Do you think you can write a Mountain Men book?
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, it all depends. What is a Mountain Men book? He's,
just like a Tarzan book, only in the mountains.
It's like a western, you know, all the books set in the mountains. I'm like, oh, so I wanted to come up with some kind of hook that was unique, and I figured that I could. I started it with, you know, Tom Mix finds this guy who's lost his memory, and all that's on him is a piece of a map to a place called Brannigan's Mountain. So he has to go to Brannigan's Mountain and find out who he is. And that was the course of three books. It was this poor schnook trying to find out who he was. And there was this great Western about some guy who lost his memory.
It was called...
A Man with Shadow.
No, it was with Robert...
Ulrich?
No.
Ulrich, it was the Lasseter Man.
Oh, that's the other one, yeah, because
Bob that
Horton
was a great
did one
show.
Called The Man from Chicago.
Yeah.
That was a great show.
Yeah. Well, I must confess, I just stole that idea.
Hey, speaking of ideas, I think this is one that I thought was great. You transformed the Old West into the Modern West with, Target West, with Lucas Wheeler, kind of the James Bond of the cowboys.
Ah, yeah. Oh, by the way, that show was A Man from Shenandoah. Just dawned on me. Or Shenandoah. But so I wrote this book called Targets West because I also love thrillers. And I was hoping that I would be able to write as many thrillers as I did Westerns. And with another publisher, I came up with this idea for a cattleman in contemporary times in Wyoming. His name is Lucas Wheeler, and somehow he always gets involved in international plots. And in the first one, in Targets West, he's about to sell some Arabians, not people, but horses, to Middle Easterners. And the State Department says, we think something fishy is going on with him. Can you keep an eye on him? And, of course, the next, you know, our poor hero goes from Wyoming to New York to London to Dubai and all kinds of remarkable adventures. Everyone says, you know, what is Targets West like? And I say it's like James Bond with James Garner.
I love it.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay.
That is very good. Now, the Western genre tends to change up some in some many times, and the newer Westerns, we're seeing different kinds of interpretations of Western stories. My wife and I happened to watch a movie last night called Ghosts of Red Ridge. It came out in 24, and basically and it stars a friend of ours, John Mars, and well, he's not the star, but he's in it. And the movie is about this sheriff who is being driven mad by ghosts of his town who have been murdered by the bad guys. And so the deputy says, hey, man, you're way out of it, blah, 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 blah. Well, it turns out the deputy is the real head of the bad guys. And the poltergeists are, you know, supernatural and all that kind of stuff. What do you think about that kind of interpretation of Westerns? I mean, I'm a firm believer in the paranormal, having experienced it very much, very, very much. So what do you think about that particular move toward that idea?
Well, before I even touch that question, you have to tell me what your paranormal experience was.
I used to work for the Florida Park Service, and I'm retired from there. And I was assigned at a place called Fort Taylor in Key West, Florida. It was a Civil War fort. It was constructed during the Civil War. It was in Union hands throughout the entire war. But all of the deaths that occurred at this particular fort were from disease, malaria, and whatever else. And so, yeah. And so, those are the apparitions, the spirits that we see. And we went on a ghost hunt one night, and oh my God, there was something that was posting guard at the Sally Port, and I'm thinking, this can't be right, you know. Had that experience. I have a picture someplace, I can't find it, of two guys standing on our parade ground at like 3 a.m. in the morning. One is dressed apparently as a Civil War soldier. The other one looks like a World War I soldier based on the weaponry that they're carrying. I experienced a Civil War soldier. I was doing a tour, and the soldier is sitting on the lip of the casement, and I'm just like, what are you doing? You know, so I mean, it's heavy duty stuff, and I believe in it big time. So,
well, so if I could skip your question for a minute to tell you an antidote, I myself normally years ago would have said for reasons that are long and protracted, there was a period where there was like 18 years where I didn't speak to my mom. It's a long story. And this is back when I was in New York for my sins, I think. I hated New York, by the way. But I was living in New York, and we were driving back after taking a trip somewhere. And I turned to my better half and said, you know, that's the exit where my mom lives. Let's get off and see her. And, you know, the response was, well, you haven't spoken to her in 18 years. It's like, no, let's get off the exit and go take a visit. And we drive to her house and knock on the door. It's the house I grew up in. And you have to understand that there was always somebody home.
Yeah.
In my house when I was growing up, and nobody was answering the door, and I thought that was very bizarre. And we got back in the car, and when I got home about an hour later, there were several messages from my brothers telling me that she had just had a massive stroke and was in the hospital.
Wow.
Now, you could argue, well, you were passing the exit, so of course you would think of her, but thinking of her and wanting to get off and see her are two dramatically different things.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, not to get heavy or mystical, but that was in many ways an eye-opening experience because I thought it exceeded the bounds of coincidence and went into something else. And that, ever since then, I've been much more of a believer in the invisible world, for want of another word.
Yeah.
So you're going to say, this guy is crazy. But I also believe that certain places have spirits
Definitely.
You could go to a place and you say, okay, I feel, you know, what this place is, and And it's not that the people were there, but it's the place has a sense of who and what it is.
Well,
so,
the fort, when it was before the Florida Park Service took it over, there was a guy who went in there and to start doing some excavations. And he knew that there were bunches of Civil War era cannon that were in that area because there are pictures that denoted it. And so he's looking for these particular cannon that had been used as like rebar in the wall construction when they did the remodeling of the place. And our ghost, Sergeant Wendell, he was an artillerist, he told the guy who was searching for the cannon where to go find the cannon. The guy went, he uncovered cannon like you would not believe. So I don't know.
I'm reluctant to dismiss it.
No, it's not a dismissive.
You know, Scott, I understand now why you call yourself the ultimate lord of time, space, and dimension.
Yes.
I understand now.
Do you have a TARDIS?
Well, yes, I do, but then I gargle.
Okay, very good. We gotta do
any of this. Does any of this have to do with bourbon?
Yeah, but no, actually not. No, when I saw my spirits, I went home and drank a whole bottle of bourbon because I wasn't sure what the hell I saw. Anyway, we got to do our final commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts in Los Angeles, Scott McCray, our guest. Be back, right?
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
Boss, I wouldn't be so awful careless about this shooting and cattle rustling.
Was I you?
You don't like it, eh?
Well, I was only thinking.
I'll do all the thinking. You and the rest do as you're told, and we'll get somewhere.
Where?
You got a six-gun where your brains ought to be.
This is the Voices of the West.
We're back. I'm Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts with you. Scott McRae, our guest. It's villainous music.
Yes, it is.
I can't pay the rent.
You must pay the rent.
I can't pay the rent.
You must.
I've come for the midnight mail.
Anyway,
the midnight
meal. Anyway,
that's a dirty story.
We call it
about a trade.
Yeah, we call it incidental music. It's just hell of a lot of fun. All right.
Question.
Go for it.
John Wayne versus Robert De Niro.
Oh, geez, really?
No, no, he knows what I'm talking about.
I do. John Wayne, of course, from True Grit. I loathe Robert De Niro. Oh, no, what am I saying? You said Robert De Niro, and for whatever reason, I
Robert
was thinking
DeMaul
of...
Robert is what I think you meant.
Yes, you said Robert De Niro. I'm like, I hate Robert De Niro.
Yeah. How about Robert Duvall?
I love Robert Duvall. Robert De Niro. If it was John Wayne and Robert De Niro, I mean, John would just like scrape him off the bottom of his boot.
We'd like that,
me?
Yeah.
You're
actually,
talking
actually,
to me?
Robert De Niro would have to reach up. Touch the bottom of John Wayne's boot. I mean, it's...
Yeah. You got to be careful what you say. I'll dig it up.
Yeah, indeed. Uh-oh. All right, it is time for shameless promotion, Scott McRae. What's coming up? What you got going? Shameless Tell promotion. Us a website.
The current book is called Gunfighter's Grave, and the next one is called Double Flint, where Flint is being pursued by an evil marshal. So it's sort of like his opposite number. Ooh. My website is scottmcrae.net, and I am delighted to announce that I am a finalist for a Western Fictioneers Peacemaker Award for my book, Cry Flint. Let's hope I win. I'm keeping my eyes, fingers, and toes crossed.
Very
That's
well.
Your second nomination for them.
Yeah, well, you had a Spur Award nominee.
Yeah.
I had a Spur Award nomination for Tom Mix and the Wild West Christmas. I was delighted about that.
All right. Now the final and most important question that we ask every guest on this program. Name your favorite Western movie or television series.
Or pull.
Ride the High Country.
Ride the High Country. Good one. Okay.
Yeah, Ride the High Country because it's the best of the classic era of Westerns. And it presages the new wave of Westerns without sort of falling into their excesses.
Yes.
And it's got Joel McRae and Randolph Scott. What more do you want from a movie?
Hello.
Harriet Hartley.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah.
All right. Todd, anything you want to throw in there quickly?
I don't think we can forget Warren Oates.
Oh, yeah.
John Davis Chandler.
Yep.
You know.
L.Q. Jones.
And, of course,
Walter Buchanan. Walter Buchanan is the old judge.
Yeah, Edgar Buchanan.
Whoa.
It's just a great film. It's a beautiful film.
It is.
So Scott. I think you've passed the test, Scott. You're in the club, and we like you.
And you are welcome back to be on the show.
And we're planning a show around you called
Yeah, we are.
What If.
Yeah, we are planning a show around you. All right, Todd Roberts, who do we have next?
Next week, I have it here.
Hold David on. Kennedy.
We know that. We know
we
that.
Have David Kennedy from the U.S. Marshals Museum in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And he used to work at the Cody Museum. So he is going to be a guest full of knowledge, fodder, and irreverence.
I wonder if his
He'll show us where the dunce we are.
I wonder if his territory is wherever he is because he's got the badge.
Well, he's stuck in Dodge.
Yeah, probably. Scott McCray, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. A real, real big-time pleasure, sir.
Thank you for having me.
No, appreciate it so
More
much.
More fun than a sack full of squirrels.
Indeed he do. And we're going to have you back on the program because...
Repeatedly.
Because you are... Your mind operates kind of like ours do. And it's we're not sure how that.
Worry about it.
Yeah, I know. We're not sure how that works, but you know, hey. So there you go.
78, 79, 80 O's, Marshall Flint.
Thanks for listening, folks. Talk at you next week.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West.